Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, our hero, Ken Lovett. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be here.
It's been a while, and we're so glad you're here. Well, first of all, big week in the legislature. Reproductive Health Act, the DREAM Act, both passed.
Both passed. It's a continuation of what we've been seeing since they got back into town, which, with the Democrats controlling both houses. All this stuff that has gotten blocked by the Republican Senate for years and years are now starting to move. The logjam has been broken. So, yeah, this week the Reproductive Health Act passed on Tuesday, and that basically expands and strengthens the state's abortion laws. Given what's going on in Washington, they said it's very important to do, to send a message and to also protect the law here in New York and to update it. It's the first real update since 1970. New York created its abortion laws 3 years before Roe v. Wade. So it's the first real revamping of it. And what it does is it basically decriminalizes abortion. It takes it out of the criminal statute, puts it in the health code. It allows non-doctors who are health professionals to perform abortions. And it allows for abortions in the third trimester in certain circumstances, as if the mother is the health is at risk or the baby is not viable. So that those are the three major changes. And then a day later, again, looking at Washington and all the fight over immigration and the shutdown, they passed a State DREAM Act, which basically allows undocumented college kids who came here with their parents and went to school here for the most part, to participate in the state's tuition assistance programs.
Well, it's incredible. So let me ask you a background question, because you, more than anybody, know how all of this works. And that is, are the Democrats playing well with each other?
They are playing well with each other right now. There's, you know, I've been saying, someone asked me the other day, how would you describe the mood down at the Capitol? And I would say jubilation and jockeying. Jubilation because they're getting to do all these things that they've been waiting to do. You know, last week they did voting reforms and some other legislation. And then, so there's jubilation about that, but jockeying because they're all jockeying for the credit. And the governor has kind of been shunted aside for some of this stuff. You know, he came out with a 100-day agenda about a month before the session started, so he could say that he has been pushing these things, which, to be fair, he has, but so have the Democrats for years and years. And now they're passing it, even though he put it in his budget, a lot of these things. And they've made it clear that there's no reason to withhold the policy or wait to do policy stuff until the budget if we have agreement on it. So they're kind of moving ahead, doing their own thing. And then he's forced to sign it and try and claim his share of credit for it.
And the two late leaders of the houses, how are they getting along?
They are getting along famously. I don't know how many more pictures we're going to see of the two of them tweeted out, which seemed like a subtle shot at the governor. Look, we're here, we're doing. They keep talking about their partnership, their friendship. And again, look, we're in a honeymoon period. The stuff that's getting done now has been around for years. It's been, you know, logjam. There's been a logjam with it. So it's not difficult stuff for them to pass. There will be things, whether it's public financing of campaigns. If you notice, they did electoral reforms, and last week that was not one of them.
Surprise, surprise.
Senate Democrats would like to do it, but the Assembly Democrats, who have passed it year after year, they weren't ready to do it just yet.
Put another way, what a bunch of phonies. I mean, give me a break. You know, the idea, Ken, that you pass it when you know the Republicans will say no, and then... But of course, we know why, because they got there under the old rules. They're not about to say, let's Harry the bartender run against us with public funds.
That's what the governor warned, too, to be fair. He had said after the elections that it's great, we're going to get a lot done, but we're going to see where they really stand on things, because now that it can pass, will it pass? Campaign financing, you know, the Democrats still say it's up, you know, that it's under discussion. It could happen, but it certainly wasn't among the first thing. You know, the first bills they passed of the session were voting and electoral reforms, and that was not among them. So that was kind of telling. And there's other issues like that. The Democrats in the Senate just passed a property tax cap to make it permanent, you know, to cap local property tax spending increases
which
at 2%.
Right, Ken, that protects their new members from Westchester and Long Island.
And they passed that at the time they passed the DREAM Act, because they want to show they're doing things for quote unquote, you know, the citizens, because they were getting hammered for doing things for undocumented immigrants. So they did that one. The Senate, the Assembly did not take that one up. They didn't rule it out, but they didn't say they were going to make it permanent. They also, the Senate Democrats also looking to protect their upstate and suburban members, did a bill that would expand the TAP program for everybody, not just undocumented immigrants. And they passed that easily. The Assembly did not take that up either.
So, you know, I playfully say, I don't think he probably likes it that much in my columns and other places. I call the Assembly leader, Carl Hasty, I call him Boss Hasty because he was boss of the Bronx and now he's boss of the legislature. How's he doing it? Are there pockets within the legislature that might contest his leadership, or has he got it pretty well under control, like Shelley before him and all these other people?
He's really rock solid. They like him. He's the opposite of Shelley Silver. You know, we all argued that it was an autocracy under Silver, that he made all decisions. He kept everyone under their thumbs, his thumb. But here, he really listens to his members. He rarely goes out in front of them. He wants to discuss things with them. He is very well liked right now, and it's been a couple of years. You know, if it was going to happen, it would have been his first year or two in the as Speaker. He got by it, and I would say overall he's very well liked.
Now, he carries their water for them. For example, this pay raise thing. They put up what they thought, I suspect, was a shill commission who was going to, a bunch of controllers present and past, and they were going to give them a pay raise, but they put some conditions on, like no more than 15% of your legislative salary on the outside. And boy, nobody wants to say, no, that's a bad idea. So Hasty had to carry the water for them.
And that's what a speaker does. I mean, you know, Sheldon Silver was really good at that. You know, Shelley Silver had a saying, and he was right, and I think Hasty understands it. He's answerable to two constituencies in his district and the Assembly Democratic Conference, not the state as a whole. Not, he has to get reelected at home. He's got to get reelected Speaker. And I think, you know, part of the job of being a legislative leader is carrying the weight of criticism and, you know, taking it for your members, taking the bullets for your members. So he has done that. But he is a lot more sensitive than Silver is. You know, he gets really angry at the criticisms.
So, you know, so I'm so old, Ken, that I remember full well when Stanley Steingut, who was the speaker, forgot one of the top rules that you just articulated. He knew about carrying the water for his people, but he forgot about the people in his district, and out he went.
Yeah, and you know what? We saw an even more recent example of that in Congress with Joe Crowley. Joe Crowley, who was number four Democrat in the House, he was a representative from Queens. He was the Queens leader. He still is. But he ran in a primary, and some people saw him as a future speaker, number four. And he ran in the primary. He did very little to campaign, and he got toasted by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Now, the most tweet popular person in the United States. It's unbelievable.
It's a new world.
It is. Okay, so let's go back to that pay stuff for a minute, just because I think people are infuriated by it. Along comes the commission. They say you want the raise, then you got to have no more than 15% on the outside. What are they doing? I mean, I know that there's somebody suing here, but if the lawsuit succeeds, they got to give back the money.
The lawsuit succeeds, they would either have to give back the money, because that was all tied into the raise. And so I don't see a judge saying, we'll give you the raise, but not the reforms. So, you know, we've had challenges like this before that didn't necessarily work, you know, legal challenges. We'll see. I mean, there were two things that they're contesting, a lot of people, the outside income restrictions and the end of the legislative stipends, known as LULUs, for most of the lawmakers. Now, talking to people on the inside, they'll tell you probably they don't have a case on the lose. That's part of the compensation package. But they think they have a real shot at the outside income ban.
All they need is the right judge.
All they need is the right judge. But, you know, don't forget, if it ever goes up to the top court, the Court of Appeals, I don't know if you remember who appointed all seven of them right now, and that's Governor Cuomo, and he's in favor of the outside ban.
As well he should be. Okay, let's go to a little bit more complicated subject than what was obvious about the pay raises for all of us. Let's go to the New York State Legislature passing a bill scrapping the use of student test scores in evaluating teachers. This is very interesting to me because Cuomo made a big mistake when he got to the governorship. He took on the teachers, and this is part of it, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say that was probably in his top three mistakes of what otherwise had been a pretty good record, you know, the Moreland being another one, the Moreland Commission. But yeah, in 2015...
And hiring a bunch of guys who turned out to be crooks.
Yeah, there was that too. In 2015...
So maybe he'll never come back.
In 2015, they passed a law at the governor's urging that created a statewide teacher evaluation system, and it said that 50% of those scores had to be tied to the test scores, the state student test scores from third to eighth grade to see how the teachers are doing.
And the teachers thought this was really an unfair law because some of them were really teaching people who really were in a very bad spot in terms of learning.
And yes, and they went ballistic. And, you know, the teachers' unions is one of the most powerful interest groups in Albany. The State Department of Education put a moratorium on using the test scores toward teacher evaluations. That moratorium was to run through the end of not this school year, but next school year, 2020 school year. So I guess that would be this school year. And so they had the moratorium, but the legislature wanted to take it away altogether. And they thought they were going to do it last year. And then at the very last minute, at the end of the legislative session, John Flanagan, who was a Republican from Suffolk County at the time as the majority leader, he decided to put in a poison pill, which was he wanted to expand charter schools in the state. And the legislature said no. The Democrats said, we're not going to do it. We'll just do it if we take over the Senate. Yeah. And they did, and it's one of the first bills they passed out of the gate.
Now, Ken Lovett, there you've gone and said the magic words. I want to get into that, and that is charter schools. They're SO out of luck?
Yeah, it's not going to be good. They have a supporter in Governor Cuomo, but certainly I don't know how much he's going to fight for them this year. He's got other education battles over funding and what type of funding and where it should go. The charter schools had both Cuomo and Flanagan. So when you have two of the three leaders, you're bound to get something over the years. Now they really don't have a champion. And we'll see if Cuomo takes up that mantle, but he's so much now trying to keep the progressives on his side.
And the teachers.
And the teachers who don't like it. I just don't see him making this a big battleground for him.
Okay. So now the Catholic Church is mad at Cuomo. They have a revised Child Victims Act, which is going to be introduced in the legislature. They have abortion. Has the church lost clout in New York?
I think they've lost clout the second that the Republicans lost the state Senate. The Republicans blocked the Reproductive Health Act for years. The Republicans blocked a bill to give transgender New Yorkers to put them as part of the anti-discrimination laws in the state. That passed this year, last week, when the Republicans were gone from the majority. They blocked the Child Victims Act, which gives victims of child sex abuse more time to seek justice as adults. So, I wrote a column recently that said the session isn't even a month old yet, and already the church is shaping up to be the big losers, and they are angry.
I saw that. You write great columns.
And they are very angry at the governor. The governor, during his State of the State budget address the other week, literally put up a picture of the Pope and talked about how the Pope says we need to tackle, you know, pedophile priests and the issue of child sex abuse, and we should follow the Pope. And that really ticked off Cardinal Dolan, from the city and really ticked off a lot of Catholics.
You know, it's interesting because in Ireland, obviously, the church is taking it on the chin and some very progressive, according to some people, legislation, including abortion. which had always been a no-no. So the real question here is, how do the Catholics in New York State, the population, feel about all of this?
The polls show that the Child Victims Act is hugely popular,
and
including...
Remind us what that is again?
That the Child Victims Act is the bill that would protect child sex abuse victims. It would give them more time to seek justice in the courts.
How much?
Well, right now, under the law, you would be 20... You can only bring a civil lawsuit until your 23rd birthday. They would raise that to 55. Also, right now, under the law, you can only bring criminal charges to someone's 23rd birthday. They would raise that to 28 for felonies and 25 for misdemeanors. So, you know, and they would also create a window to revive old cases for 1 year. So right now, if you were abused by a priest or a teacher or whatever it would, whatever institution, you would have 1 year, even if the time limit has run out on your particular case, to revive it and to seek and file a civil lawsuit.
Do we expect to see an awful lot more people coming forward?
I think you might. I mean, the church kind of saw the writing on the wall and started their own programs, and they've been dealing with it in the last year or so. But I think you're going to see people come out. And, you know, one of the things they wanted was the ability to sue so they can actually have a go through the discovery process and see what the church and other institutions, not just the church, but the Boy Scouts and the Orthodox community and yeshivas and public schools. This way they would have to actually provide discovery information. And then you could see what they knew, when they knew it, and all those kinds of things.
Speaking about yeshivas, obviously there's this place in New York, suburban New York, a little bit more, called Curious Joel. And, you know, they've had a tremendous run of politicians flocking to them because there's a tendency to vote as a group. It just would appear to me that at least one state legislature, Senator Skoufis, won despite their opposition to him there. What does that portend?
Well, it's going to be interesting because probably the one who carried their interest the most was Simcha Felder, a Brooklyn state senator who had been, he's a Democrat, but he'd been conferencing with the Republicans in the majority, and he offered to go back to the Democrats when they took the majority, and they said thanks, but no thanks. So he's kind of like a man without an island right now.
That was an incredibly courageous move on the part of the Democrats. I really didn't think that they were going to have the guts to do it, but they did it, and God bless them.
Well, you know, when you have 39 out of 63, it makes it easy. I'm not sure what they would have done if it was 32 or 33. I have the feeling they would have brought them back.
That's a good point. One of my favorite things that I've been talking about for a long time is how the governor had done something very bad to Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. He had a pre-audit function, and as you remember more than anybody because you've been writing about this, some of the people around the governor have now been convicted, three major people. And there are those who believe, I'm one of them, that it might have been different had Tom DiNapoli had the pre-audit function to say in terms of some of the bidding that was going on that led to the conviction of these three. What do you think?
It would have, look, you know the expression? It couldn't hurt.
Yeah, chicken soup.
And certainly it would not have hurt to have another set of eyes. But the governor surprised a lot of people because the Democrats in the legislature have been flexing their political muscles and saying, we're going to be independent, we're co-equal branch. And one of the things they'd been threatening was to do legislation that would restore the pre-audit authority of the comptroller. So the governor, when he gave his State of the State budget address, actually surprised a lot of people when he said that he has struck a deal with the comptroller that would give him back his pre-audit authority with the caveat that any pre-audit has to be done within 30 days.
That's the face saver.
And that was the face saver, but that was also, it took away some of the leverage that the legislature was hoping to have. And some of the lawmakers were upset with DiNapoli for cutting the deal, and they were already upset with DiNapoli over the pay raise situation. So, you know, there's a little tension there. Carl Hastie is not only angry at the governor these days, but he's also very, very angry at the comptroller. He feels that DiNapoli betrayed them, and he's been very angry. And at the governor's inauguration, it was interesting.
Betrayed by making a deal.
But not so much with making the deal, but by the pay raise. He feels restricting the outcome, he could have voted no, and he feels that he betrayed, because don't forget, it was the legislature that installed him as comptroller when there was a vacancy. So they were very angry. And it was interesting. I think Cuomo, in his own way, sought to kind of stir the pot at his inauguration on Ellis Island. And it was very subtle, which he can be sometimes. He talked about how it's intimidating to give a state of the state in front of when the comptroller's there, because he always gets the loudest applause from the legislature. They love him. And it was taken. I took it and I asked some of them and they agreed that I wasn't off base. It was a shot. Hey, your hero, you know, screwed with you over this, over the pay raises. Don't forget that.
Interesting. He's always very interesting to watch. Gillibrand announces for president. So has about, 375,000 other people. She got a shot?
Yeah, why not? I think it's an uphill battle, but certainly it doesn't hurt to be a woman at this stage running for president. Her views right now are where the party is. There's some certain hurdles that she has. For instance, her views right now are much different than her views that she had when she was a congresswoman upstate. When she was pro-gun and anti-immigration reforms. Back then she opposed driver's license for undocumented immigrants. Now she's for it. She opposed a lot of the gun control measures. Now she's for them. She says it's an evolution, having, now represent the full state, but a lot of people see it as political opportunism. So we'll see. She's going to be asked a lot about that on the campaign trail. And I think there are Democrats who are upset with her for calling for Al Franken's resignation. Sure. She was the first one, and they feel that that could hurt her with the donor base.
I say she's got no shot. Watch me be wrong. Okay, so Senator Skoufis, who I mentioned before, is for keeping politics clean. Are you satisfied with we only have 2 minutes on this, but are you satisfied with what the legislature is doing on ethics reform?
I don't know if we've seen they closed the LLC loophole, which is something that's been called for. LLC loophole allowed companies to basically skirt the campaign contribution limits. The corporations are only allowed to get $5,000 a year total, not to a candidate, total. And they got around that by creating unlimited amounts of LLCs, limited liability companies, that could give higher amounts anyway. So basically they can give unlimited amounts, and they gave millions to the governor and they gave millions to the Senate Republicans. They did close that loophole, so that is a big deal. They did some electoral reform, but they didn't get to a lot of the other stuff. And I think that's up on the table. I think they'll want to do something before the end of the session, but there wasn't immediate agreement on what, so they went and didn't do it.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, this is where the rubber hits the road. These guys have been talking ethics reform, but, there are an awful lot of people who have been skirting some of the rules and other things, and I think it's very important that this gets done, but I don't see any great movement.
No, or any great agreement. And the reality is, you had a speaker and a Senate majority leader who were all convicted, and they still didn't do much in ethics reforms.
That's right. So anyway, our guest has been the great columnist and Albany Bureau Chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. Ken Lovett is a hero to so many of us. He keeps everything honest around here. Ken, thanks for joining us once again.
Anytime. Be well.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.